This is the 33rd broadcast in the America Looks Abroad series, presented by the officers and staff members of the Foreign Policy Association. This nonpartisan organization, open to all who are interested in American foreign policy, offers accurate information on current international events. In the world of today, foreign affairs are your affairs. War threatens in the Balkans, just as Hitler is setting the stage for an invasion of Britain. Mr. John C. DeWilder, Research Associate of the Foreign Policy Association, will discuss what next in Europe. Mr. DeWilder.
Good afternoon. The Russian invasion of Romania has thrown the European picture into confusion. Before this latest development, Hitler could concentrate all his attention on the preparation of a death blow against Britain. Now Germany seems to be menaced by a war in her rear. The Balkan powder keg, which the Axis powers had kept dry, appears to be on the verge of explosion. The occupation of Bessarabia and northern Bukovina by Soviet Russia may touch off the fuse. Is Stalin preparing to stab Hitler in the back? And will this new menace prevent Germany from carrying out her plans to invade the British Isles? These are the questions that people are asking today. Romania surrendered part of her territory to Russia in response to another one of those ultimatums which have become so fashionable in Europe today. Moscow claimed Bessarabia and Bukovina ostensibly on the ground of old historic and national ties. Romania had seized Bessarabia in 1918, when Russia was torn by revolution and civil war, and the Soviet government had never reconciled itself to this loss. But it is not true that this province has always been inhabited chiefly by Ukrainians, whom the Russians regard as blood brothers. Today, the Russians and Ukrainians combined constitute only a quarter of Bessarabia's population of over 3 million people. Now, as before the World War, a bare majority of the population is Romanian by race. In Bukovina, which has a population of 853,000, the Russian claim has greater justification. In two districts of this province, the Ukrainians, together with a few Russians, make up at least half or a majority of the people. The real motivation of Russia is strategic. Undoubtedly, the Soviet government has been deeply disturbed by the defeat sustained by France and Britain. Like many of us, the people in the Kremlin had not expected such a resounding German victory. Stalin had hoped for a long war, followed by revolution. Although he tied himself to Hitler by a non-aggression pact last August, the Russian dictator never had any desire to see an all-powerful Germany arise as Russia's neighbor. Despite expressions of Russian-German friendship, relations between Berlin and Moscow were not characterized by any great degree of confidence. The Russian government probably remembered the Hitler had advocated in Mein Kampf a policy of eastward expansion at the expense of the Soviet Union. And in the fall of 1939, it took the precaution to establish military protectorates over the three small Baltic countries, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, which might conceivably be used as bases for a German attack on Russia. When Germany conquered Poland, Russia acted quickly to prevent the Ukrainian part of it from falling into Hitler's hands. In the economic field, Nazi Germany and Soviet Russia cooperated loyally on paper. But in practice, cooperation was far from wholehearted. The Russians, for example, did little to facilitate the transportation of vital Romanian oil supplies to Germany through their section of Poland. And now that a sweeping German victory appears imminent, the Soviet Union is doubly anxious about its defenses against the German war machine. She is trying to step up the production of arms by lengthening the working week. Henceforth, the Russian worker will have one rest day in 7 instead of 1 in 6 as before, and he will labor 8 hours per day instead of 7. And there is another straw in the wind. To strengthen discipline in the army, the Soviet authorities have reintroduced the military salute, which had formerly been abandoned as a sign of servility, incompatible with the dignity of a Soviet citizen. But above all, Russia is seeking to ensure her safety by extending her military frontier. A little less than 2 weeks ago, Soviet troops marched into Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. Moscow was no longer content with the military protectorates it had previously established in these countries, it decided to occupy them and dictate the formation of new governments completely subservient to the Kremlin. The occupation of the Baltic was scarcely completed when rumors came that Russia was also massing troops in the southeastern corner of Europe, on the Romanian frontier. King Karl of Romania sought feverishly to stave off an attack on his country. He hurriedly set up a new totalitarian political party, including the pro-Nazi Iron Guard, which he had so vigorously repressed in the past. Obviously, he wanted to enlist the aid of Hitler in preventing the disintegration of his dominions. But Moscow was quick with its ultimatum, and Romania could not afford to fight. There were too many other hungry wolves about, ready to gobble up Romanian territory. King Karl decided to reserve his country's strength for them. Now, how does the seizure of Romanian territory strengthen Russia against Germany? If we look on the map, we see that Bessarabia borders on the Black Sea. To Soviet Russia, the Black Sea is of vital strategic importance. It gives access to the great Russian oil fields at Baku in the Caucasus. Many of the new industrial centers of Soviet Russia are also within striking distance from this sea. For Russia, mastery of the Black Sea is therefore a matter of life and death. She cannot permit any major power to establish itself on this sea. Such a possibility threatens, however, if Russia wins in Western Europe and then turns her attention to the Balkans. Russia has now partially forestalled a renewed German drive to the east. By occupying Bessarabia, the Soviet Union has pushed its frontier to the mouth of the Danube. The question now is, will Russia go still farther southward in the direction of the Turkish Straits, which control the entrance to the Black Sea? Immediately to the south of Romania lies Bulgaria. The Bulgarians have always had a strong affection for Russia, which played the role of a godfather at Bulgaria's birth. Since the World War, the Bulgarian people have cherished the hope that Russia would someday help them recover the southern Dobruja, which their country lost to Romania in 1913. The Dobruja is not particularly valuable in itself, but it is now the only piece of territory which separates Russia from Bulgaria. Should the Soviet Union one day help Bulgaria to seize the Dobruja, then these two countries would together control the entire coast of the Black Sea down to the Turkish frontier. Finally, if Turkey should be induced to enter into an alliance with Russia, a bulwark would be erected against further German advances into the east. At the moment, Turkey suspects that Russia and Bulgaria may try to move south at her expense, and she has put her army and navy on a war footing to anticipate such a drive. But if Moscow plays the game cleverly, it may allay Turkey's fears and enlist that country's cooperation against Germany. Like Russia, Turkey considers herself endangered by the Rome-Berlin Axis. Fear of Italy and Germany drove Turkey into an alliance with France and Britain last October. Now that France has been defeated and Britain greatly weakened, Turkey must either jump on the German bandwagon or fall back on an alliance with the Soviet Union. She may choose the latter course, particularly since she was for a long time on very good terms with Moscow. Germany obviously does not relish this prospect. She doesn't like the motives which inspire this latest Russian move in the Balkans. The occupation of Bessarabia puts Russian troops within easy striking distance of the Romanian oil wells from which the German war machine draws part of its supplies. Besides, the Rome-Berlin Axis fears that the Russian action might cause a general war in the Balkans. There's plenty of tinder lying about in that part of the world, so that a small fire may easily start a big one. I have already mentioned Bulgaria's desire to take a slice of Romania. But King Karl's country is also threatened by Hungary on the west. Hungary passionately wants to recover the province of Transylvania, which juts like a big wedge into the heart of Romania. It is no wonder that King Karl has ordered general mobilization in his country. To some extent, Germany and Italy may help him. The Axis powers don't mind seeing the Balkans divided against themselves, but they don't want to see a full-blown war break out in an area on which they depend for vital foodstuffs and raw materials. Thus, German and Italian diplomats have probably been working feverishly these last few days to prevent the Balkan powder keg from blowing up. It would be exaggerating, however, to say that the Nazis are greatly alarmed about Russia's action in the Baltic and the Balkans. They have not opposed Russia's recent steps, in part, of course, because they had their hands full elsewhere, but above all because they have always been exceedingly confident about their ability to deal with the Russians. In private, the Nazis have boasted that they can easily push the Russians back the moment the war in the West is liquidated. Nor do they fear that Russia will launch a direct attack on Germany. They are convinced that the Soviet Union has neither the inclination nor the power for such an offensive. In this opinion, the Nazis are probably correct. Less than a week ago, TASS, the official Russian news agency, categorically denied reports that 100 to 150 Soviet divisions had been massed on the German border, or that relations with Germany had been aggravated by Germany's successes in the West. Unquestionably, the Soviet Union faces a dilemma. By joining the war against Germany now, Russia would expose herself to the full fury of a German attack if and when Britain is defeated. On the other hand, if she stays neutral, she may one day have to face Germany entirely alone. At the moment, it appears that Russia is still determined to stay out. She is relying on her new strategic frontier and the vastness of her territory to keep Germany at bay. During the last few days, there have been rumors that Hitler might make peace with Britain and then turn on the Soviet Union. Such a development is, of course, possible. But there is little reason why Hitler should now stop short of the conquest of Britain. The Führer might entertain a peace proposal from the British side, provided it came from a government willing to take a pro-German orientation. But he probably feels that any peace overtures by Germany would only be interpreted as a sign of weakness. Besides, the Germans have never had such a marvelous opportunity for a final reckoning with the British. The French army, exhausted and defeated, has finally laid down its arms, and Hitler has succeeded in his long-cherished objective of driving a wedge between France and Britain. Resistance in the French colonial empire also appears to have collapsed. In Belgium, Luxembourg, and France, the Germans have acquired enough iron ore to keep their war production going full blast. The resources of virtually all of Europe are being mobilized against Britain, and Germany, in full control of the European coast, can now impose a counter-blockade on the British Isles. For Germany, the hour of destiny has struck. The German people have long struggled against what they consider Britain's domination of the world. They have felt that by virtue of their numbers, their cultural achievements, and their progress in industry and commerce, they were entitled to a position at least equal, if not superior, to the British. Rightly or wrongly, the German people have been convinced that the British always tried to thwart them whenever Germany attained a position where she could threaten Britain's supremacy or carve out an empire of her own. Today, Nazi Germany is in the position to strike a death blow at the British Empire and establish its own hegemony for good. The decks have been cleared, and the guns are trained on Britain.
Mr. John C. DeWilder, Research Associate of the Foreign Policy Association, was today's speaker in the America Looks Abroad series. If you would like a free copy of this talk, send your request to the Foreign Policy Association, 8 West 40th Street, New York City. That's Foreign Policy Association, 8 West 40th Street, New York City. We invite you to tune in next Sunday to hear another speaker in the America Looks Abroad series. This was a program of the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.